Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to the Care in Action podcast. My guest today is not here with me in Vienna. He is in Nairobi, Kenya. And as always, I start with a very short introduction. David Mutua has been working for nearly 3 years as regional communication advisor in Eastern Central Africa and Southern Africa regions at CARE. David holds a degree from Daystar University in Nairobi, Kenya, with a specialty in applied computer science. He worked at an online news agency with the largest photo archive in East Africa, and he worked for several NGOs. And I would right jump into our topic of today. We have this conversation because of the release of the 8th edition of CARE Austria's Breaking the Silence report. And this report is dedicated to the so-called forgotten humanitarian crises. These are crises with more than 1 million of people affected. And one of the main parameters, and I can tell you there are many that this is based on, but one of the main parameters is the appearance in online media worldwide. And as a matter of fact, this year we have really a special situation because we see, David, and you are born and you are Kenyan, is it correct? You are from Kenya?
Yes, I've been born and raised in Kenya.
Okay. So this year, it is really special that we see that all the 10 forgotten humanitarian crises worldwide are in sub-Saharan Africa. Of course, Kenya is not amongst them. But looking at the picture that we see in this current report, what is your first and fast reaction on that all the forgotten crises are in Africa?
First and foremost, thank you for this opportunity to join you on this podcast. When I look back and reflect upon the list that has been shared of the forgotten crises in Africa, I think I'd say I'm not very surprised because from an international landscape, a lot has been happening. And unfortunately, a lot of the crises that have been happening within, especially sub-Saharan Africa, are some that are protracted. When you look at the Horn of Africa drought, it has been happening for like the last couple of years, maybe 3-4 years. When you look at all the different crises, they have been over, you know, a period of time. And after an extended time, you realize that people get to have donor fatigue or just fatigue about hearing the different places and the crises that are happening. So it doesn't come as a surprise when media attention or the focus or of the international world shifts to others. And this ends up leaving, unfortunately, many people forgotten and they slip through the cracks and their narratives are not told anymore. And in fact, just to give maybe just a background of myself, one of the reasons I ventured into communication and becoming a journalist and a consultant and within the sphere of communication is basically to be able to tell these stories, the stories of the forgotten people, the stories that have slipped through the cracks. And it does become disheartening after a while when the focus shifts and people are no longer listening to the cries of individuals within and communities within sub-Saharan Africa especially, and their stories get forgotten.
Before we get a deeper look at the humanitarian situation in many African countries, I would like to ask you from a European perspective, because I live and work here in Vienna in Central Europe. You live and work in Nairobi. What, from your point of view or from your experience, were the conflicts, the crises that you heard most about in Nairobi in your daily life?
I think based on the role and the work that I have, my focus has essentially been around the Horn of Africa. So it would be around what has been happening in Somalia, the drought in northern Kenya, where I come from, in Sudan when the conflict broke out, in DRC, where there has been, you know, continued fighting and displacement of people. Those are the key ones. But as the focus shifted, not only on the international media landscape, but also on the local scene, we started seeing more of what happened in Ukraine and Russia, which had a direct impact, again, on even basic cost of living items here at home. Definitely when the Gaza-Israel conflict started, we started also seeing a lot of that being covered in our local media and also in the media around. So those are the key ones that I would say over the last year that I have seen coming up a lot. But yet again, because of my role and interaction with a lot of my colleagues across the CARE Federation, we get to hear about the different crises that happen, be it the floods or the earthquakes that happen across the globe.
Yeah, but this is due to your role. And we are also looking, because our appreciated listeners, they are in different roles. They are having completely different jobs than the two of us. So I wanted really to highlight that also in Nairobi and in Kenya, the media, of course, focuses then on the big international conflicts like Ukraine and the war in Gaza. And it's exactly the same as in Central Europe, because it is full of news of Ukraine and Gaza, of course. And CARE is also working in both areas, in both regions, and has a long working tradition there. But we hear relatively small news, if we hear any, about some of the countries listed in our current report. Now, David, this, you are a comms person. I also work a lot in comms, but this report is not about criticizing the media that they don't report enough about the so-called forgotten crisis and that they focus on current international conflicts. From your point of view as a comms person, what do you think about how many crises can we talk at the same time? And how do we choose, or should we choose, which crisis we put in the focus and which one less? Because as a matter of fact, we can't digest, as a human being, I can't digest 15 conflicts or 20 at the same time, the same day. What is your take on that?
That's a very interesting question, and it gives a perspective of some of the challenges that arise. Just as you've correctly said, as human beings, we cannot focus a lot on crisis. In fact, a lot of people within my sphere, in outside of communication and outside the office, it has gotten to a point where a lot of people in Kenya do not consume your regular news anymore. It would almost be like instant news that get on X, formerly known as Twitter, or on Facebook, and get information that is directly impacting them. I guess because at some point we all got information overload, and a lot of people decided to, switch off from TV or from print. This had a direct impact on the media houses, because then they had dwindling ratings and dwindling funding, which meant that they'd have to do a lot of restructuring. And in the process, the capacity that of individuals who would have been needed to go and source for these stories and regularly update us really shrunk. I have friends within the media who initially were focusing, let's say, on a particular theme, be it climate change. But now, because of dwindling resources, they have to spread themselves across different themes. And so as a result, what you realize is, unless a crisis has multiple factors, then, or it's very urgent, then it becomes very easy for it to slip through the cracks when it doesn't have a multitude of impacts that it can be able to showcase. If it's only one track, then it slips through the cracks, and people will focus on another urgent thing that comes up. And so what that has done from how people consume the information they receive is now they become very selective. And this is forcing also media houses then to change how they package or even approach a crisis. And in the end, you'll find that the protracted crises that would have ideally been covered where they have, and they probably have only one track for what slipped through the cracks. And you'll also find people now become more selective. They might decide, I want stories or content that affect, let's say, women and girls, or they affect children, or they affect business. So then the media houses or the media has to adapt to that to provide a service to the audience. And in the end, again, the information gets lost.
That's the famous personal bubble that each of us is following more or less, right?
Yes, exactly.
And especially young people consume their information more and more through social media and less through the so-called established media, newspapers, print media, but also television and state radio or private radio. And this is something, you described it so well for Nairobi and the place that you are working in. And it also applies, and I think maybe even worse to a very strong extent, also to European media, because resources are really, really shrinking, and resources to send people on a media trip, on a press trip, for example, they are really small. If they would not be provided by donors like the European Union or by other donors, it would be really difficult to have some humanitarian reports right from the place where the catastrophe or the crisis is happening. So this is something that we as CARE, I think we are quite struggling with that. What is your idea? What could we do from a comms side to make it more easier for global and international media to really visit places of crisis, like mentioned in this report? Because in most of the countries, in nearly all of them, apart from Angola, CARE has a presence and CARE is working. So we are really specialists in working in protracted crisis, right, David?
Yes, that's very true. And it's, I think, a model that we are trying to adopt. As you rightfully put it, the resource of deploying journalists to some of these spaces becomes very challenging. And not only deploying that, but again, finding stories or narratives that cover a multitude of facets. I, in my line of work, collaborate and engage with a lot of journalists, even within the wire agencies. And one of the challenges that they face is, for example, I will tell them there's a crisis happening in place X, but it covers, for example, maybe health and hygiene or water and sanitation. The next thing they'll ask me is, does it have, you know, like a gender component? Does it have a climate component? Does it have a conflict component? Because when they're going to pitch it now to their editors, remembering that also resources is not only financial, but also human, then they need to be able to show them that if I visit this place, then I'll be able to get a story that covers climate, covers education. And this has been the case. So I'll give an example. We worked very well with a recent news agency. We were able to deploy them to Somalia. And when they got there, they were able to come up with 5 different stories over 3 days. So then I think it gives the agency value for money to be able to deploy this person, even if it's at someone else's dime. And you'll find the challenge of some of these crises that are ongoing, much as they have been protracted, they now have, they're affecting different aspects of life, be it business, be it education. And so the other challenge that usually comes, even from a CARE perspective, is being able to get them into some of these spaces based on the sensitivities of where we operate. But I think there is more that we can be able to do. And what we're trying to do from CARE's perspective is now identifying individuals who are already in this space, who can be able to tell the story in their countries and in their context and package it and send it to us. So this is a different way of approach that then becomes cost effective. Secondly, we're also able to get the context and the story from the person living within that space, their perspective, and then it informs how we can be able to package it. And then it gives a more clearer picture because we have someone on the ground. And so I think this is one of the ways that can help news agencies once they now get these packages to be able to showcase the situation to the world.
This is actually what we are doing a lot. And I think it is a really good approach that people from the region, from the country where the crisis takes place, tell the story. On one side, it is cost effective. It is also good for the climate because traveling gets more and more limited these days, or it should at least get more limited. But what is, from my point of view at least, the biggest advantage is that also local journalists from Kenya, from Burundi, from Senegal get involved in the comms work of CARE, right?
Yes, that's very true. And I believe one of the things that the COVID pandemic taught us is the fact that we are able to communicate and liaise across boundaries and borders simply by using the internet. When we're able to communicate and package content and then send it via the internet, just as you've rightly put it, we, number one, reduce the carbon footprint. It offers an opportunity of employment for individuals in those spaces. And it also it enables us to tell the story from people who are living within that space. So it is very possible, and it's one of the pilot ways that we can be able to get and shine a light on these crises that are happening within the region.
And also the two of us, David, we are using modern technology and we are on two continents and doing a joint podcast, which is also something that 10 years ago nobody would have dreamed about. I would like to focus a little bit on the fact that sometimes, but maybe this is a sort of stereotype that I'm quoting now, but sometimes one has the impression that forgotten crises, all of them this year in Africa, we had different reports, but always we can say the majority it was always the majority of countries with the forgotten crisis in Africa. So do you think it's especially difficult to shed light on the situation in African countries?
That's an interesting question, and I think it poses a challenge. I don't think it's difficult. I think it poses a great challenge to be able to compete for airtime along some of the crises that have happened across the world. Coming back to the fact that we've said it before, that they're protracted, so they have happened over a period of time. People might think that they have an understanding or there are no new dimensions to the challenge. As you rightfully put it earlier, climate change has come. And initially, for example, cyclones that were in Southern Africa that were, you know, part of the normal weather pattern, now come with more intensity. Yeah. So much as initially it would have just been a simple cyclone, now it comes with a cyclone or a higher category of cyclone that then impacts the community, bringing in not only flood, but also now waterborne diseases, and it cuts across different spaces. So this, I think, these new dimensions, being able to communicate them effectively to audiences so that they also understand that, yes, the crisis has been protracted, but as a result of it being protracted, it is worsening. The impacts are higher, more sectors of society have been impacted and affected, and the need to find ways to resolve them as soon as possible is very important before they spill over and cause, you know, a worse catastrophe than we've seen before.
And I want to ask you another question, and taking chance of the opportunity now to talk about this topic with somebody from Kenya. Some of my African colleagues who live here in Austria, they would say that they don't want always to be in the media as an African country, for example, in the connection with crisis, war or conflict. And some of them confront us and say, we forget about the fact that a crisis is something in a certain area and the rest of the country is very modern. People have very modern approaches in life and things are completely different than the picture that is delivered by some journalists and also by some organizations about many places in Africa. And also the two of us, we talk a lot about the continent, but we are totally aware, and also I'm totally aware, that it's the same as we, as if we would talk about Europe and not the single countries. So we generalize for the sake of time in this podcast a little bit. But do you think that, I mean, Kenya is a country that I would say is quoted very often here in the media as one of the top travel destinations. You go there because it's also fancy to go there. On the other side, Kenya has a lot of problems, as many countries around the world. Yeah, but Kenya, I would say, is from the outside look more a travel destination. But what do you think about this whole discussion? I'm sure you have heard about it. That many countries in Africa are connected and talked about only in the context of crisis, war, or climate change, like for instance, Somalia.
Yes, I think that it's a fact, it's a reality of fact on the ground that the negative aspects of a situation are what is what sells more. And I think it probably goes to human nature, because you'll find, for example, in plays that have a tragic ending or movies that have a tragic ending will have more views or more likes. And I think it now, this comes back to how the content is packaged. Yes, we can definitely say there are negative aspects that happen, be it in Kenya, be it in Somalia, be it in the DRC. But then there are also the positives. And I think that's where we as communicators, or we as especially working in environments where we can be able to highlight and in context, be able to find positive stories within the crisis. I think that will still communicate even more. When you look at countries, for example, where probably gender has been really suppressed, and then you find that there are stories that you can be able to tell where women and girls are able to, despite the space they're in, be able to offer impactful changes within society, even despite the crisis. So how then can we be able to get these stories out? And that's why, again, it comes back to the aspect of being able to operate within a context that we understand, being able to find these change makers within the spaces. So yes, a crisis will happen. A crisis will definitely occur. And again, not only in Africa, but across the world, you might find countries where we will probably consume a lot of their negative content, but yet we have knowledge of, for example, different parts of their country have, you know, beautiful beaches and become what are travel destinations. But on the other hand, they are also dealing with different societal issues.
We have to join forces even more than we did in the past. And I think this podcast is one of the tools that might help us to really make our audiences, be it in Kenya, be it here in Austria, understand also the challenges that we face working for a global organization, to be as regional as possible, as local as possible when packaging content and telling a story, but spreading it as global as possible. Because what you mentioned at several times, and I want to go back on that important issue, that support, and this means also funding, is expected and is necessary to solve, or to help solve, not to solve it alone, but to help solve a protracted crisis, for example, that a crisis doesn't get protracted, because then it's already very late and it's getting more and more expensive. So would you say that the expectation is that funding comes not only from the region, but also from outside the country or outside the continent to help people get out of, for instance, forgotten crisis?
Yes, I think it's very important that funding is not only from within, but also without the country or the region, because we, as you've mentioned, for example, Kenya is a central hub, not only for local travel, for travel into the region, the country, but also the region. There are so many connecting flights, for example, that happen. If there is something that happens and there's no travel, people cannot be able to come in or go out, then it becomes, or epidemics come in and then it spreads because it can be able to go out very easily, it poses a global challenge. So it doesn't only become a Kenya problem, it becomes a problem for the entire region and for the entire world. So the earlier we're able to respond to a crisis, especially when there are indicators that it's going to happen, I think really helps to mitigate the spread or even the growth of that disaster, so that we can be able to respond to it adequately, swiftly, and efficiently. Because again, as we've mentioned in this podcast, the world is now a global village. People are able to access spaces that they were not able to access earlier much faster. So how are we able to support each other to respond to the different crises before it becomes a regional or even an international crisis?
And what I also want to flag clearly as a follow-up to your answer is, and I experienced it many times when I was traveling in different African regions, that the first reaction to any emergency comes from the country where the emergency happens and not from outside. This is a message that I really want to deliver to our audience here in Austria and in Central Europe. People are not sitting and waiting what is coming from abroad. The first reaction always happens and ongoing in the country where the incidents happens. So many people in Europe might not know that a country like Uganda hosts, I think, the most refugees from neighboring countries in Africa. Nearly every African country hosts refugees from neighboring countries, and they are coming from these protracted crisis regions very often. This is something that many Europeans really tend to forget. Not everybody's just waiting to jump in a boat and risk his or her life going to Europe. Most of the people, they migrate inside their region, and inside Africa, there are millions of people migrating. Let me also tell another story. It was a few years ago. It's a true story that I experienced, and I had the chance to visit two or three times at a time one of the biggest refugee camps. I think it's still the biggest in Africa, at least, which is Dada up in Kenya. Mm-hmm. And many people from Somalia have been there for years. And one of the times that I was there, it was an obvious problem that people in Dada up were not able to produce enough fresh food, meaning green vegetables. This is something that is a scarce thing in all the refugee camps worldwide, but especially in this dry desert-like area of Dadaab, there was not enough fresh food for the thousands of people there. And there was more than one initiative in Nairobi, and David maybe knows even the people who produced fresh vegetable and brought it from Nairobi to Dadaab to help the refugees really have a sort of reasonable nutrition. Yeah. So what I want to highlight is that there are many initiatives also on the ground contributing to the crisis that sometimes seem to be so forgotten from an outside or from an European perspective.
Yes, that's very true. A lot of that happens within the first instances of response is usually, more often than not, the people within the country. And I like the example that you've used of Dadaab camp. There's also the Kakuma refugee camp, which is also in the northern part of Kenya, where when there was a crisis, there was a drought that hit most of Kenya several years back, where now we as Kenyans decided to rally and get trucks and got foodstuff on the trucks and had them deployed. So even people within the capital city and the different cities within the country were able to now start supporting the individuals who had fled from different countries that fled conflict from the neighboring countries, which again, as you've said, becomes a regional problem. People were able to fill 18-foot trucks and 18-wheeler trucks and get them to some of these areas so that they could get the people could get food. But then remember, once this it starts becoming protracted, then there is need for support from outside to be able to now support these people, get back on their feet. And just as you rightly also said, I was in Dadaab earlier this year and I was meeting people who have been in the camp from 1992 when the conflict in Somalia started. So this has become kind of their new home. So we meet the second and third generation because they cannot be able to go back home. They do not have homes anymore. The spaces that they used to occupy before have been destroyed. And since since because of that, now they have to settle in and this camp now becomes their new home. Mm-hmm. And so how then can we as an international community be able to support initiatives and organizations like us, CARE, to be able to ensure that these individuals, when a crisis strikes, we're able to help them get back on their feet, help them to not only meet their immediate needs, but also the needs in their near future so that they can go back home? Because no one wants to live on a handout. You know, it's important to note that most of these individuals do not want a handout. They just want an opportunity to be able to overcome this crisis that they are facing so that they can go back home and continue their day-to-day lives and continue living and becoming productive members of the society.
So it's not the choice of the people who become protected members of a crisis. It is often decided by faith or whatever, whatever you want to put in this place. But I think it is really important that we had this conversation. And I would like to end with the importance, and you did it in your last answer, I want to build on that, that be it private donations, private contributions, and as important institutional donors like the European Union, they are the second biggest humanitarian donor in the world. And when you count it all together, humanitarian and so-called international partnership finances, then they seem to be the biggest at the moment. So we are citizens. I'm a citizen of Europe. You are a citizen of Kenya. The challenges are that big that we have to join forces to really approach all the things that we have to deal with. CARE, if you want to get engaged or stay engaged, CARE is a super excellent option. You see how close we work together over continents because we are a digital village nowadays. And I hope that in a few years' time, maybe I'm too optimistic, the Breaking the Silence report might not have as many candidates from the continent of Africa than it currently has, because it is really a tragedy that we even talk about forgotten crises or forgotten groups of people. Nobody should be forgotten. So please have a look at our Breaking the Silence report 2024. Have a look at CARE Kenya. They have also a beautiful web page. And please spread the word that joining forces over countries, over continents, this is one of the key ingredients to deal with conflict, crisis, and the impact of climate change. David, I want to thank you for our conversation. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, let's join forces.
Yes, thank you very much. And again, I'll end with what you've just said. We remain optimistic. That is why we continue doing what we're doing in some of these spaces that have been happening for years and years. Thank you for the opportunity to engage with you and with the team. And again, we remain optimistic that soon the Breaking the Silence report will have less and less crises and more people will get engaged and support us in what we're doing. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For further information, go to care.at. Sponsored by CC Real.